We want to check in now on a continuing story, and we will continue to follow it as it develops. It revolves around the notion of identity and citizenship and how we define those. White Americans were not the only people who owned slaves in the pre-Civil War era. Native American tribes also kept black slaves. But with an 1886 treaty, most of the Cherokee slaves were freed, and they were then treated as part of the tribe. There are some in the Cherokee Nation now, though, who are pushing to sever those ties with the descendants of freedmen. Here's Diane Hammonds, Attorney General for the Cherokee Nation.
The Treaty of 1866 did not give citizenship to the freedmen nor their descendants.
But those descendants are fighting back to retain their status as Cherokees. Joining us this morning is Marilyn Van. She's president of the Descendant of Freedmen Association and one of the Cherokee freedmen who actually initially brought this case against the Cherokee Nation. Also joining us, Circe Sturm. She's a professor at the University of Texas at Austin's Native American and Indigenous Studies program. Her book is Becoming Indian, The Struggle Over Cherokee Identity in the 21st Century. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say that I'm the descendant not only of African-American slaves, but also of Cherokees as well. I just want to get that out of the way. But I have a question for you, Marilyn. I think that not only are most people unaware that Native American tribes had slaves, but I think most people assume that if they did have slaves, they were not treated the way that slaves were treated on southern plantations.
Exactly true. In the Cherokee Nation, they had black codes. They had chattel slavery. It was race-based. It was, the tribal government protected slavery. And there was not that much difference between slavery in the Deep South and slavery in the Cherokee Nation.
But there was a lot of crossover as well in terms of miscegenation.
Well, yes, originally, you know, you had intermarriages, adoptions, and things like this, but by the 1820s, because there was a great deal of white intermarriage with people coming from the South, tribal attitudes got worse and worse regarding people of African descent.
Why was that?
Well, because these were white Southerners who came in, there were opportunities for them to trade, do business, become wealthy. They got Cherokee citizenship instantly by marrying Cherokee women. And so they wanted to become wealthy plantation owners, too. And they could do this as Cherokee citizens. So they pushed the attitude of having a society similar to what was going on in places like Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and attitudes regarding people of African descent.
Let me ask you, Circe Sturm, you've done a lot of research into the history of the Cherokee tribe and this debate over citizenship, and the Cherokees, some of them, say that we have a culture to protect here, and it's not just a culture, but a people to protect, mm-hmm. and we should be allowed to say who's a member of the tribe and who is not. What's wrong with that?
I do believe that as a fundamental aspect of sovereignty, that tribes should have the right to basically define their own citizenry. But the issue here is that there is a kind of ignorance about Cherokee history on this point. There's been this consistent kind of erasure about the black story within the Cherokee Nation, and there are intentional reasons for that, there are unintentional reasons for that. But, you know, it's been a story that's been largely absent from the history and about which many contemporary Cherokee citizens don't have a lot of knowledge. And then it makes the situation sort of ripe for manipulation, I think. And so you basically have a citizenry that's trying to exercise sovereignty and trying to vote, but they're doing it from a position where they're dealing with a lot of negative propaganda, racial propaganda in part, and not really able to make a fully informed decision, I don't believe.
In this particular case, it kind of comes down to some civil rights issues, right? I mean, could the Supreme Court actually step in at some point? And if so, what kind of implications would that have?
It has incredibly serious implications for all of Indian country if sovereignty gets undermined. And absolutely, if the Supreme Court should hear this case, it would have the opportunity to reverse itself and to reverse the precedents that have been set. So if you look at the legal precedents, I mean, basically the rights of tribes to define their citizenry have been upheld, and that's where we are right now. And also a treaty-based agreement is considered to be the supreme law of the land. It predates, or in some cases, the Constitution itself. And so it has this incredible weight. So it is a very dangerous context that could have you know, very negative repercussions for all of Indian country. But at the same time, you have the Cherokee Nation violating a treaty, which also sets the stage for this legal case to happen. So it's quite a frightening moment, you know, this opportunity for the race question to come in and undermine something that's such a fundamental right for tribes.
Let me go back to you, Marilyn, because this is about race. As I understand it, your organization represents people who don't share genetic ancestry with Cherokees. Is that correct?
Yes. Some of the people whose ancestors were listed as freedmen do not have documented Cherokee ancestry. That's true. Most of them do, but not all of them, certainly. We've never pretended otherwise.
If that's the case, then can you understand or sympathize? Would you accept a compromise?
No, because the Treaty of 1866 gives all persons whose ancestors fall under the treaty the rights of tribal membership and their descendants. The reason the freedmen people have citizenship is that their ancestors were exploited, where they were enslaved, and this was a way both the U.S. and the tribe agreed to do something different. This is no different than the Deep South, you know, giving citizenship to persons of African descent or other nations where people have been exploited or colonialized or enslaved. That's the way it's always been.
You grew up 60 miles from the border of the Cherokee Nation, right?
That's correct.
Your entire life, you've grown up as a Cherokee, as how you identified yourself, as both an African-American and a Cherokee.
That's correct.
I imagine that it's difficult for you because the sovereignty of the Cherokee Nation or any tribe is a sacred thing. And I can't imagine how you ended up making the decision to take this legal case outside the hands of the tribal nation to which you belong. Was that difficult?
Yes, it was, because first, the freedmen people, we tried to work within the tribal forums to make changes, but it was more profitable for leadership to keep the status quo. But just stop and think, how different is this from states' rights, from Mississippi, Alabama governors who wanted to take away the rights of citizenship, not the actual citizenship, of black people in the South? It's one thing for someone to say, halt, we don't want new immigrants to have citizenship here. We don't want people to come here who've never invested in this nation, in this state. It's an entirely different thing than to take away rights of people who have been there, whose ancestors have helped build up a nation.
That is Marilyn Vann, as you heard, a Cherokee since her birth. Cersei, last question for you. I assume this is being watched pretty closely, not just by the tribes, but for everyone who has an investment in the sovereignty of the tribal nations.
Yes, it's being watched very closely all around Indian country, and there's quite a bit of coverage in Indian country today with both Cherokee and non-Cherokee people kind of weighing in on the importance of this case. There have been people on all sides, both Cherokee and non-Cherokee, who have been advocating for freedmen rights. So I want to make sure that people don't have the impression that all Cherokees uniformly are against freedmen rights in this situation, but there's certainly a lot of political debate and concern about this case right now.
That's Cersei Sturm. Cersei and Marilyn, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marilyn Vann is the president of the Descendant of Freedmen Association and one of the Cherokee freedmen that initially brought this case against the nation. And Cersei Sturm is a professor at the University of Texas at Austin and author of the book Becoming Indian. Thanks to both of you.
If you want to catch up on that conversation or anything else on the program, visit thetakeaway.org. We've been talking about that heated Republican debate last night and getting your thoughts on the GOP candidates. What issue concerns you the most?
Hi, my name is Brandon, and I'm calling from Oklahoma. One of the main things I want to hear the candidates talk about is stopping so much foreign aid from going out. I don't think that we're, as a country, in the position to be giving away money. I'd like to know from the other candidates what they feel about foreign aid.
Tom on Facebook says, I want to hear how they would work with others that have differences in opinion, one of those things we were supposed to learn in kindergarten. What do you think? Go to thetakeaway.org or just tell us your view at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.